Hey there, welcome to ATL in 29, a podcast where we look at the NBA from the starting point of Atlanta. My name is Kevin Chouinard. I'm here with Glenn Willis. We're recording in between the win over the New Orleans Pelicans and the upcoming game with the Oklahoma City Thunder. Any particular place where you want to begin tonight, Glenn?
Jalen in the short roll. I thought
Okay.
that was, that adjustment, first of all, to kind of go from 1-5 to 1-4 pick and roll caused New Orleans to go for a while without blitzing Trey. Putting shooters in each corner gave Trey space in the middle of the floor. I thought that adjustment was really the biggest factor in the game. And, I don't know, maybe you. I don't recall a game where Jalen was just consistently in the primary action over and over and over. I don't really remember him getting a ton of like reps in a single game like that, but his execution was impressively good for a guy who hasn't done a ton of that. Quinn's adjustment, Jalen's effectiveness, giving Trey space. Trey is a master with space. To me, that was the thing that changed the trajectory of the game.
I have a question for you.
Okay.
Since you brought up the word adjustments, give me your ballpark estimate for what the Hawks' third quarter net rating is.
Oh gosh. Plus 5.5.
It's plus 25.3. An offensive rating of 132.5 and a defensive rating of
Wow.
107.2.
Yeah, their halftime has been a good resource for them, it seems, right?
That does seem like good adjust. That almost seems like more than just good adjusting. It almost seems like if they have a good idea, it's almost like they're sitting on it. Let's try to run our base stuff, but if that doesn't work, here's a cool little plan B we could try later.
Yeah, and I do think like what you'll see sometimes in younger coaches or less experienced head coaches is they'll try to make a big correction all at once in the middle of live play. And I think it'd be interesting to hear Quinn talk about it. I have to speculate a little bit
Oh, he
on what they
wouldn't say
think.
anything, I promise you.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, that's a silly thing to
I mean,
even
good for him, but like, yeah, there's no point in doing that.
But we've talked about the fact that lots of new stuff on both ends, and I think he's seems to have a good instinct for kind of the right time to kind of make that adjustment. I mean this was in a way there were different issues they were solving for, but this was kind of a replication of that Minnesota game. The Minnesota the game the deficit was bigger, but. I mean, in that game, the Wolves felt in control in the first half. In this game, the Pelicans felt not fully in control, but more in control in the first half, in that sense. So yeah, I mean, it's fun to watch a team that seems like the players are really believing in what the coaches are bringing forward, the plan, all that sort of stuff, and they're staying. I almost use one or two of the C's there, which might would be kind of funny, but they're staying composed.
Right.
I'll use that one. And kind of just working through things, kind of like a mature team, which has not always been what we've seen in those kinds of situations in the past.
I don't even think composed is one of the three C's. I thought it was calm, clear, and connected, but maybe
Yeah, I chose a different C on purpose.
you went with the fourth C. And you mentioned the Minnesota game and the New Orleans game. Like the Minnesota game to me felt like that was more of a defensive change, whereas this one was against New Orleans was more of an offensive change. But watching the two halves of that New Orleans game, it's like Trey didn't look like he was having fun in the first half, just constantly getting blitzed and them just trying to get the ball out of his hands, and he's trying to just get the pass away over length, and it's hard to just even get the ball out, let alone actually do something that feels like you're being productive there. And with that change in the second half, you see he looked a lot more comfortable, obviously a lot more happy, and that gets a lot of buy-in, I think.
Totally, yeah. And you know, and Willie Green's no slouch of a coach. I mean, he tried everything. He put Zion at the five. He had Dyson Daniels at the four. They were got really aggressive kind of later in that third quarter and kind of forced the Hawks to have to kind of switch up a little bit. Thankfully for the Hawks, like Jalen and Onyeka were both good in the short roll. And Clint, like, picked, like, when he wasn't in the primary action, he was really good at, like, just finding a good spot for himself, making himself available when the ball rotated. And I thought Jalen's work in the short roll kind of gave Clint just like easy shots at the rim, like in that third quarter there, you know. And so it was, everybody was kind of doing their job. But I mean, the Pelicans kept searching for a lineup where they could be more aggressive and kind of regenerate that aggression at the point of attack. And, you know, and Zion got all the way up like half court a couple times, and Dyson did too, you know. And if that's, I don't know, say Hunter in the short role, or you know, in previous seasons, JC in the short role, you know, those guys have other strengths for sure. But you know, we talked about the fact that Jalen and Onyeka, kind of what makes them a little bit different offensively is the ball handling, the passing, the ball skill. That's just a little bit more than what you're used to seeing in the average player at those position, and that really showed up in this game.
Yeah, and.
I had to feel good for Onyeka to finally make a couple 3-point shots, though, right?
Yeah, and you know, you mentioned getting Clint out of the primary action. They did that on offense earlier in the second half. They actually did that on defense too.
Yep.
You know, they when they got to some lineups, you know, they didn't. They didn't play Valanciunas down the stretch. They used Dyson Daniels. So it was Zion at center with Herb Jones and Dyson Daniels. And they just let Clint guard Herb Jones, quote unquote, in the corner. He really wasn't in the corner all that much. He was just kind of available as a help player at the rim. And, you know, he would get out to the corner if needed. Sometimes Herb Jones brought the ball up and he, you know, Clint held his own in those situations too. And, you know, New Orleans never really figured that one out. The game was over before, you know, anything chased the Hawks out of that alignment, and it seemed to work pretty well for them.
Yeah, a little bit of that kind of Celtics with Rob Williams action there, you know, put the big guy on the guy in the corner that you're not as worried about. And there was one play like where I think it was the one that ended up in the shot clock violation for the Pelicans, but Clint started up kind of way up the floor on the left side. Ball rotated, he worked all the way back across to the right side, and he ended up falling over on the ground. I can't remember like the what caused him to kind of slip, but he was like, man, he had some serious range on that possession. And he was, I mean, when I went back on the rewatch, he was so good at the rim, just defending the rim. Mm-hmm. And then he made enough plays out in space too that, I mean, it's funny, in that second half, a lot of times when the Hawks are in a tight game, you watch a few possessions, you're like, oh, it feels like they need to go in this direction, or it feels like they need to go in that direction, or do they need more shooting on the floor, or, you know, do they need to get Jalen back, you know. And I felt like watching, even on the rewatch, watching the whole second half, I thought the plan was good the whole way. I don't know, it was like, it's kind of strange, a strange experience to watch this team and to not be kind of, in my own mind, kind of fishing for that adjustment that I feel like isn't coming. I felt like every possession was, you know, obviously not perfect in terms of execution. The Pelicans have good players, but it just felt like the Hawks were solid in what they were doing that whole second half. And that's, you know, what's caused this team to not reach the upper 40s wins or, you know, get higher in the seeding is losing close games and not executing, you know, late in fourth quarters. That's one of the problems with the last couple of seasons that kind of held them back. And I thought they just controlled all 24 minutes of the second half in this game.
Yeah. Is there anything else you want to add from the Pelicans game before we either look ahead or look at general stuff?
I think that's it for me. I mean, the Pelicans have a bunch of long defenders. Like, they bothered DeJounte, and, you know, Bogey's threes were like maybe another half step you know, further out, he's comfortable with that range and stuff like that. But they're a tough defense to deal with, you know. So, like I said, that adjustment was huge, and it just took a little time for the Pelicans to kind of get back to being aggressive. And by that time, the Hawks are really confident in what they were doing. So, yeah, that's it for
actually,
me.
I have one thing. What happened to CJ McCollum? He had like a collapsed lung today. Was this just like an illness thing? Is this like an injury from last night?
I don't know. Okay. I don't know kind of where that came from, but I'll be honest. Like I read, like I was at the gym working out today and I saw that notification come through and I half read it. So I can't remember what that word was, but it didn't register for me right away what that word meant. So it was the mnemonic. I can't remember what the word was, but yeah, I don't know. He I think he looked fine last night, but you never know for sure, you know.
Yeah, I was just there was one play where he like bumped with Trey sort of in the corner going out of bounds, and afterward he was kind of rubbing his chest. So I didn't know if this I couldn't tell from the diagnosis if that was just like an injury thing or something that was brought on by illness or what. I was surprised.
I'll have to Google it later on. But the Pelicans are kind of going through it like injury wise. I mean, it's been a tough start for them, you know, in that way. And losing CJ is big. I mean, you know, like Jordan Hawkins is playing a ton for them right now. That probably wasn't the plan, you know, before Trey Murphy went down, and there was an Alvarado, and you know, Zion, I think, is still going to sit, you know, now and then to make sure he's good, you know, to go. And so they're in a kind of a tough spot with that, right? You know,
yeah.
From the health standpoint.
They have, you know, it's probably encouraging to them that they have good health from Zion and they can put together, you know, before this McCollum thing, put together a starting five, but the injuries that they've had have sort of shredded the bench.
Yeah. Yeah, it was interesting to me that the way that the Pelicans tried to problem solve on offense in the second half was just to play through Zion, basically at the five. You know, Ingram wasn't really getting shots. By that point, CJ like really shot the ball well in the second half. He was the one guy who like really was good offensively for them in the second half. But I'm on the rewatch. I was like, they made like Valanciunas, you know, take a weird mid-range shot in one play. They were making Herb Jones kind of create for himself. And you know, those guys are professional basketball players. This isn't me trying to make fun of them. But when you can kind of steer the usage away from Ingram and CJ and Zion had a lot of usage in the second half, but they made him work for what he got. And so I even thought that was kind of a less obvious kind of manifestation of the Hawks good defense in the second half is that they were forcing creation from the secondary guys.
Yep. Speaking of injuries, the Thunder are not going to have Shai Gilgeous-Alexander tomorrow. Besides the obvious, well, they're probably not as good. How does it change the Thunder? Does it change anything that they do stylistically?
Yeah, it's hard to know. Like, you know, they'll play through Giddey, you know, and, you know, their Jalen is really good too, and they're integrating Chet, you know, finally. And so I feel like they're a team that's kind of working on things. But if you watch this team play under, I hope I get it, Dano, is that how they pronounce his last name? I think that's right. But they're like the ultimate, they have been anyway, they've been kind of the ultimate system team, right? Mm-hmm. Yep. And so kind of plug and play, and they've had a lot of young guys kind of come through their program, if you will, their player development program, and they haven't really changed kind of what they've been doing. Now Chet could be a thing that really changes that, but like a lot of what they do is five out, really spread you out a lot, you know, and attack you once you get all spread out. Right. And Chet's skills, conceptually, at least at this point, he's only played a few NBA games now, fit like perfectly, you know, into that. And so I think it's going to be a challenge. Like even without Shai, you know, they're so kind of systematic, and like it almost doesn't matter. It's funny because like over the years the Heat are a little different now, and that they kind of ride, Jimmy late in games and stuff. But like 4 or 5 years ago, they were to me the ultimate system team. It did not matter first units on the floor, second unit, a mixed unit or whatever. They ran their stuff. I mean, to precision, and the Thunder are kind of becoming that. And so I think it's their system that is going to really challenge the Hawks defensively to be good individually at the point of attack, be solid at the point of ball screens. Are we switching or not switching? Are we how are we handling the getting the big to the level? If they're running delay action with Chet right in the middle of the floor, or another one of their bigger players right in the middle of the floor, how do their wings and guard kind of hold up behind the play if Clint's way up or Onyeka's way up? So I think this is going to be maybe the most interesting defensive challenge that we've seen the Hawks kind of deal with so far. And again, a lot of it goes back to, that systematic stuff. Now, Shea's such a great driver, and Shea with an angle is really hard to contain. He's not a super bursty athlete, so I think sometimes he's a little bit miscast in the way people kind of think about him. But he's smart, and he once he gets an angle, he has that length to kind of take advantage of that. But it'll be interesting to see, kind of what the shot profile looks for them, because they don't go out looking for like, hey, we want Shea to take 25 shots, or they take the shot a little bit like the Bud Hawks, in that the good shot's what we're looking for. It kind of doesn't matter who gets it. And so I think it's going to be a big challenge for the Hawks.
Yeah, it's definitely I'm intrigued to see the Hawks defense against the Thunder offense. I think that's really the end of the floor that I'm going to be more tuned into. It was you go back to the Pelicans game, and it's like, the biggest change in that game was when, the Hawks were started to rely on Jalen Johnson in the short role, and that's what the Pelicans didn't have. Is that, you look at the Hawks base defense where they're trying to show, and you get that moment where there are two sets of arms trying to swarm at the ball to slow it down, and it's like, sure, you can get the ball to Valanciunas 12 feet from the rim, but in that spot, what's he going to do with it? Like, he's not going to take a dribble or two and try to get to the rim. He's not an exceptional passer. And so, I thought that really kind of got the offense stuck. And, the Thunder aren't going to have that kind of problem. They're going to be much more spread out, much more capable of maneuvering the ball against the Hawks base defense. And I'm just wondering if, if there's some wrinkles, some changes. It does seem like there are more little things being added here and there to the defense compared to, maybe what we saw in the preseason and stuff like that. But I'm fascinated to see sort of how they start and, what they do on the fly to change things up as needed.
And on the other end, they have historically used Dort on Trey. I would imagine that as this season goes along, Cason Wallace will be kind of groomed as, maybe a second unit guy that takes some primary responsibility around that. Jalen Williams himself is kind of emerging as a surprising defender too, and Shea can really impact plays with his length and disruption. Obviously, he's not going to be playing, but it'll be interesting to see, how that goes. Last couple seasons, they would go really small with like an Isaiah Roby at the five and just like switch every. So they have lineups where like we're switching everything, right? And they have other lineups where they're not so aggressive switching everything. Maybe they're switching one through four, or maybe they're read switching or what have you. But it's just going to be interesting as the season goes along with Chet to see like what defensive role do they envision for him, and how does that change, if it does change, kind of their base template that they want to use kind of game to game. He's not the strongest guy. He's young. He's got a lot of growing to do, and just natural maturing to do as he gets older and all that sort of stuff. But it's just going to be interesting to see how this they're one of the most interesting teams in the NBA this year to me, to kind of just see kind of how this all kind of comes together for them. And I think they have a good coaching staff. I think that, you know, this is a well-coached team. And I think, you know, I forgot where I put them in this, in my projection for the standings, but it wasn't bottom five. I think I had them around the middle of the pack is what I thought they'd do. I think they're going to win, you know, 43, 44 games, somewhere in that range, if they can have the health that they want. But certainly, you know, I think this is maybe the last season where player development is the top priority. Not that I expect it to be a non-priority after this year, but this team has enough like of a really good young core to start, I think, next season, really, really trying to make some stuff happen, and they're going to be a fun team to watch along the way. So big challenge for the Hawks here.
Yeah. All of these teams have new floor designs for the in-season tournament, and really the one for the Thunder should just list every draft pick that they have for the next seven seasons. Just like, you know, whatever font you can squeeze it in there. Just put those there. Do you make anything of AJ Griffin not playing in the New Orleans game? You know, when there was an injury early on to DeAndre Hunter, the entry into the rotation at that point was Garrison Matthews and not AJ. AJ didn't play, and I don't think the Hawks were necessarily Hunter came back, so it's hard to know what they thought of Matthews at that point. I didn't think that he was especially effective, but just I'm more focused on AJ. Like, what do you make of what's going on there?
Yeah, it's hard to know. You know, as we've seen him play, it's hard. I think it's hard for a young guy who's getting inconsistent minutes to kind of find a rhythm. But my best guess, and it's all it is that they're working on a few specific things with him to kind of get him more ready to kind of do what they need him to do. I think his office is a big change for him. Like, it's, you know, Bay has had to adjust. We've talked about a lot of the adjustments for a lot of players. Maybe, you know, we talked about how well DeJounte has adapted and things like that. But like, how many shots, like after the trade last year, was Bay just on the weak side lifting from the corner and, you know, and just getting that shot, you know, a weak side all the time? And they're not generating like nearly the volume of shots with just basic, you know, middle pick and roll, you know, space shooters, et cetera, et cetera. And Bay is having to kind of, you know, shoot on the move with like different kind of movement than he did last year. And a lot of what they did with AJ last year was basically two things. One was the same thing, lifting from the weak side corner. And then they would occasionally, you know, let him run kind of a slot pick and roll. And he has that nice kind of deliberate pace, and he's got that floater. And that was basically the two things that he was allowed to do last year. That was it, you know. And so my sense is with the offensive connectivity, they're looking for the cutting, the slashing, the moving, the, you know, kind of keeping flow at all times, even when the opposing defense kind of takes away your primary thing you're trying to do, is, you know, my guess, and again, it's just a guess, is that they're just trying to get Jalen a little bit more ready for kind of all of that new stuff. Because last year, his role was super simple. Like I said, two things. And they need more from everybody now to kind of keep that movement going. Those, you know, second and third kind of, you know, impromptu kind of actions and things like that. You have to be really solid in that sense. And Bogey can do that for sure. Bay is on offense, I think, adapting well. Jalen's doing amazing, you know, and such. But my sense is he's just probably not quite ready to do all of the things that they need their wings to do on offense, and they're just working with him on that. That's kind of connecting the dots from what we've seen. Like in the preseason, like first of all, in summer league wasn't great. The preseason he was kind of inconsistent, and I think that has, in my mind, kind of maybe rolled into the beginning of the season, just the Hawks coaching staff thinking, okay, we gotta work with him on a couple of things to kind of get him all the way where we need him to be in that way. That's my guess.
Yeah, that sounds reasonable to me. And especially, you know, I thought he's adapted to what they've done on defense pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's, you know, tying it into the offense, I think, is entirely plausible. I think that sounds pretty reasonable.
I mean, like at New Orleans is really good on the offensive glass. So it's like, Garrison really competes as a rebounder, like Bay, kind of like Bay does, and I don't know, in that sense, it was like, we just want more size. I mean, it feels silly to say that because AJ's big, he's a big young player. But he's still, I think, still kind of learning how to fully utilize the size and length that he has. Where, Garrison just has a little bit more experience in the league, in that way. So in that one game, when I saw that happen, my first thought was, this might be about rebounding, so, but I have no idea if that's true or not.
Very good. Anything else you want to deal with tonight?
I'm looking forward to that Orlando game too. I hope we get like a good long stretch of Jalen versus, Vaccaro. That'd be fun. Wagner and maybe Hunter kind of facing off, even though Wagner really kind of plays a two for them a lot, So, not to fast forward too much. There's a lot to enjoy about this Oklahoma City game, but later in the week that game down in Mexico City should be I think, a fun game. If Hawks fans haven't seen the Magic this year, I mean, I talked last year about how much I think Jamal Mosley is an emerging coach in the league, and they have a good core down there. So I just think that these next two games are, even setting result aside, I just think they're going to be really fun games, really fun basketball watching. So I'm just looking forward to that.
Very good. Yeah, sounds good. I wanted to add a little bit of bookkeeping. I had a few things. I can only remember one of them. My memory is not very good, but
This day has been so long with time change
oh,
that
you're right.
I it doesn't feel like the Hawks played yesterday. It feels like it was like 4 days ago. That's how long this day has felt to me.
Was I don't know, there was a game a couple of weeks ago where, or it had to be against the 76ers, where Abdel-Nabi said that Quinn Snyder's name was Quincent Price Snyder, and when Snyder heard that, he recoiled, like, what? No, what? Like, and then, yeah, well, who said that? Well, Allah said it, and Allah was Quinn's college teammate, and I guess he was speaking tongue in cheek. Evidently, Quinn's older brother would call him Quincent Price after Vincent Price.
Oh.
And I guess that must have picked caught on at Duke, and then everybody called him
Yeah.
Quincent Price Snyder, which is not actually his real name.
Yeah, I caught that too. Because that game, I think, was on NBA TV. So I had to, I think we had to, a lot of us had to catch the
Gotcha.
Sixers. It's idea from where I'm sitting, out of market,
No, I
and
think
I
that
heard
was
that
everybody. I
too.
think that was the one game that was not broad,
Oh, Bally's didn't
it
do
didn't
the
have a
down.
Hawks broadcasting. Yeah.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah,
So I
so
think
it's
everybody
funny
heard that.
because I was like, it sounded like he was making fun of his name, but I wasn't sure if he was making fun of a real name or a fake name. So that's
And
yeah.
since we're old enough to know who Vincent Price is, and most of our audience probably isn't,
Yeah.
he's the guy from the Michael Jackson Thriller video that does the, narration.
Yeah, that's his most famous thing, although there are plenty of other kind of things he's famous for too. But yeah, inside jokes are great for basketball broadcasts.
Especially in the preseason.
Allah's pretty good though. He he's
Yeah, he's
he's
pretty
he's
good.
pretty good. They have a good broadcast team there.
They do.
So
They do.
overall,
Yes.
I like them.
Yep. Agreed. All right. Well, I guess we can wrap it up and say goodnight, Bob.
Yeah, good night, Bob.